Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order today, Tuesday, March 1st, 2011. And welcome back, everyone, from your week's hiatus. We now have an avalanche of bills that have now percolated up, and we'll be launching into those very soon, occupying our committee time. But right now, today, of course, as you know, on the agenda, we're going to be going over the Commerce Department budget for those areas that we have jurisdiction over. And if I I'll tell you, first I'm going to give Dan Mueller a couple of minutes to go over a very briefly spreadsheet that you'll have in front of you. But also, just to review, covering budget areas is a new for the Commerce Committee. In the past, we've been strictly a policy committee, but this time around, we do have three divisions within the Department of Commerce to put together a budget for. And there's a total of seven different areas, two of which, energy and telecom, are part of the Senator Rosen's committee, so we don't deal with those. Of the five remaining, two of them don't have general fund dollars, but they are revolving funds. That's the Petroleum Tank Cleanup Fund, and as well as the Weights and Measures Division. Those are essentially self-financing, but we do have to take a look at those. And then the three divisions within the Department of Commerce that we will have to dig into are going to be financial institutions, which you'll recall primarily covers the examinations, and then also the market assurance, which is the enforcement arm of the Department of Commerce, and then also the administrative services, which covers everything from the commissioner's office and HR, and then also the unclaimed property. So that's just a real brief high altitude of what our jurisdiction is going to be going forward this session. So first, I think Mr. Mueller wanted to take a couple of minutes and talk about the spreadsheet he has prepared as an ongoing document for us to work off of. So I'm going to turn it over to him, and then when you're done with that, we'll go on and we'll hear testimony from the commissioner and other staff in the Department of Commerce. So, Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There should all be a spreadsheet in your folder. It's a front and back one-pager. This will be sort of the spreadsheet that we'll be working off of when we put a budget bill together. The way it's structured now, the first line 6 through number 19 are totals for the Department of Commerce for the divisions that we're tracking in this committee. So the way the spreadsheet works, the totals are up on top, and then each division follows below that. This will sort of follow the same structure as the appropriation bill. Usually the appropriation bill has all the totals for the agency in the first section and then details after that. If you look at columns, the first three columns that are labeled forecast 2010-11, forecast 12 and 13, and forecast 12 or 2014 are each biennial totals for the current biennium, which is 10 and 11. Looking forward to the next biennium, 12 and 13, and that's the forecasted base amount, and then the tails, which is 14 and 15. Now, I'll note that the forecast that came out yesterday did not affect the Department of Commerce at all. None of their programs are changed with the forecast. But the columns we're going to be looking at today as we go through the governor's budget, you'll see the next set of columns called Gov Budget 12 and 13. And then there's a shaded column that says Gov 12 and 13 minus 12 and 13 forecast. Those will be the changes that the governor is proposing as compared to the base. And then I put percentages there also so we can see that. So the totals, we'll look at the total changes first, and then we'll briefly go through each division, and then we'll turn it over to Department of Commerce. So the governor's proposing extending the petroleum tank cleanup fund, and they'll talk about that. That has an effect of a direct appropriation to the Department of Commerce of $1,052,000. That's on line 9. And otherwise, that funding would stop in 2012, and the governor's proposing extending that, so it would start again in 2013. The governor's proposing a total general fund change of $1,040,000. That's on line 10. To this part of the agency, that would be an overall 3% reduction to to the general fund. It's more in each separate division, but for the overall agency, it's a 3% reduction. Then the next change line you see on line 13, that's extending the open appropriation part of the petroleum tank cleanup, and that's where the money actually flows out into the projects, and they'll talk about that also. Moving down, the first division that the chairman was talking about, financial institutions, the governor's proposing no changes to this division. So the general fund spending for financial institutions would be $13.552 million for the upcoming biennium. And there's also some special revenue money that also flows through that division. The next division would be the petroleum tank cleanup fund, and the Commerce will talk about a change item for that, and that is extending the collection and the spending for that fund. Like I said before, there's about $1,052,000 of direct appropriations that would be added for that, extending that, and then some $17.1 million of open appropriation spending. The next division, if you turn over your page, administrative services, the governor is proposing a general fund reduction of about two FTEs in this area, which would be a savings of $408,000 of general fund, and this would be a 5% reduction to this division of commerce, general fund reduction. The next is market assurance. And the governor is proposing a general fund reduction of $632,000, and that's within three different change items, and they'll go over that when we look at their detailed budget. But it's a total of three FTEs and then some also other admin reductions within this division. And that, again, is a 4.9% general fund reduction to this portion of commerce. And then the last division, weights and measures, there's no general fund money in this division, and the governor is not proposing any other changes to this division of commerce. So that is it for the change items, and I'll be happy to answer any questions on the spreadsheet. Otherwise, the Department of Commerce can probably talk about their budget.
Are there any questions for Mr. Mueller? Okay, seeing none then. Welcome, Commissioner. Appreciate you coming with your staff and spending some time going over the budget proposals. So I'll just turn it over to you then.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning and to give you an overview. What we have today is there's some on these pages. What I'll do is I'll cover some of the broad scope overall policy. Tim Janke, our Chief Financial Officer, is here to walk you through the numbers. We'll go back and forth a little bit. We can either, at your pleasure, whatever, take questions as we go. We have staff, our leadership staff here to answer all the questions that you would have if you have any with respect to the details of the programs. So starting on the first page, as we had done before, just to summarize some of the overview points with the department, Commerce's mission is to make sure that we have equitable commercial and financial transactions and reliable utility services in the energy area. The department regulates and licenses more than 20 industries. It investigates and resolves consumer complaints. The department advocates for the public interest before the regulatory bodies, for example, in the Public Utilities Commission, and focuses on fostering business success, working with the business community and making sure that they have an opportunity to succeed in Minnesota and to do everything we can to help them do that. With us, we have today, I just want to introduce our staff. In addition to Tim, Deputy Commissioner Kevin Murphy in Financial Institutions, Deputy Commissioner Steve Carlson in the administration area. We also have, at your request and anticipating the anything in health insurance, April Todd Momlov, who's now partially with my staff. We also have Joel Fisher, Director of the Petra Fund, Amy Trumper, on unclaimed property. And I think that's who we have. There's one or two other that were here earlier, but in any event, we're happy to go through this and give you an overview and then answer questions as we go. I'll turn it over to Tim next.
Good morning, Mr. Janke. If you please, if anybody comes up to the microphone, just please identify your name and then your role in the department for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Tim Janke, the department chief financial officer for Commerce. We're going to, if members want to flip over to page 3 of the handout here, I thought we'd kind of start a little bit here with some higher level just to get the sense. Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet here details all of the information specific to this committee, but just to give a general sense of what the Department of Commerce, the whole budget looks like. We have over $556 million of spending through various funds. Here, the funds that we're generally are going to talk about today, the general fund, and everybody I think has a pretty good sense of what that is. The petrol fund, that fund is basically funded by a surcharge on gasoline tax. Funds are taken in and then spent for petrol fund activities. So I think you'd Chair had mentioned earlier, kind of a revolving fund for that activity. Special revenue funds that are fees and assessments that are paid in by regulated entities or others that are used for specific purposes. And then the other major fund that we'll talk about today is the workers' comp fund, or that we'll mention is the workers' comp fund. Our department receives a small market assurance division, receives a small appropriation out of the workers' comp fund to do workers' comp-related fraud investigations. As Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet.
Thank you for the question. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Janke. The federal stabilization funds, were those ERA funds or those ongoing funds? And can you describe what those are used for?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, those are ERA funds, and that's all in the Office of Energy Security. So it's more kind of trying to give you the global view, but those aren't under the purview of this committee. That's under Senator Rosen's committee. The funding for those is tailing off and will be done in fiscal year 13.
Senator Bonoff.
And Mr. Chair, and with regard to the federal funds, is that also energy-related dollars?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, the bulk of those are energy, but there is a portion of those funds that are for the insurance exchange implementation. So there's, I think it's 10.3 million dollars. There's 600,000 this year, 10.3 next year, and then 17.5 million in fiscal 13 that are for the implementation of the insurance exchange.
Thank you.
Moving on to page 4 is just a simply another view of the all agency, kind of giving the general sense that 76% of the budget, of our total budget, is Office of Energy Security. On page 5 is a revenue versus expenditure slide. In general, just showing total revenues here for the department of just over $664 million and spending of just over $556 million with the general fund categories outlined there. Moving on to page 6. Is a department FTE summary, basically looking at our FTE counts going back to fiscal 2 and then looking at some of the more current fiscal years. We were at about almost 350 FTE back in fiscal 2, and in fiscal 10 we were down to about 324. That 25 FTE reduction was about, happened over that period of time. The pie chart here is just meant for a pictorial to try to get a better sense of the bigger areas within the department. You can see that we have four programs that have the bulk of our staff: the Office of Energy Security, Market Assurance, Financial Institutions, and Administrative Services. Moving on to page 7. Here's where we start diving down a bit more into the individual into the individual areas within the department. The Financial Institutions Division has a different
Mr. Chair.
Zelka has a question.
Yeah, excuse me. Can I go back to the last page just 1 second? I just related to market assurance. What is the increase in FTEs for? I see there's a pretty big jump up there. I'm just wondering what that's for.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, there's a number of staff. We have a 9 FTE increase for the insurance exchange implementation in fiscal 12 and 13 FTE in fiscal year 13.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a couple of questions about the insurance exchange, or is there a better?
Well, I think we're probably going to get down that road a little bit. Because I have a couple of questions on that as well. We'll just continue to do the overview.
Back on page 7, there's a number, the graph at the chart at the top here basically outlines the kind of 5 bigger areas, programmatic or work unit areas within financial institutions. Identifies just over $20 million of spending in financial institutions for the coming biennium. You can see that the larger areas are the insurance examinations and bank examinations area. Of this $20 million, 13.5 is general fund, and the rest, 6.6, is special revenue fund. That's for the insurance exam revolving account within that area.
Because of Mr. Janke, so let's say if we could take a second to look at this, because I want to make sure that we all understand this and make sure I understand. This, the governor had proposed no changes to the financial institution section because it essentially you bill out the costs of those exams. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. In essence, the total or near the total of the general fund is assessed out to the regulated entities. Basically, it's an upfront appropriation that our work unit receives. All of that funding, when it comes back in, is considered non-dedicated general fund. It goes right back to the fund, and we're not able to use that when we collect it.
So we put language or statutory in the appropriation. You're saying we appropriate it up front, even though the money's not there yet, to give you the authority that when it comes in, you're saying.
Yeah,
okay,
Mr. Chair, that's
and good. Then you these folks are on they're on a rotational schedule. So you do, I think you do bank exams every 18 months or 12 to 18 months and or so, and then you you bill them after the fact. Is that how that works? You say we've examined you, here's the bill, and then they write you a check, you put it into that fund. Is that how that works?
Mr. Chair, my general understanding is yes, we do that for the direct examinations, as well as I believe there's some indirect pieces as well for the times that those individuals aren't out working specifically on an exam to recover the other related costs.
Okay. And Senator Bonnef has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, if I go back a couple slides, and it shows that your expenditures are actually less than your revenue. Is that why? Is that because I'm still trying to understand where are we making money on this thing? It looks like more money is going back into the general fund than we actually would expect.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonnef, I'll ask Tim to kind of flesh this out for us. But the answer is yes, we do have it's a net revenue generator. There are major areas that account for that. Unclaimed property is one where that money comes in to the state, and we can find the rightful owners of maybe somewhere between 40% and 50% of that, but the rest of it does get put into the general fund because it is sheets to the state. The other is some other funding that does come in, and also with respect to some of the licensing. So, in essence, the money does go into the revenue fund, but the expenditures by the department are at the, you see it at the $42,000 or $42 million level. But Tim, do you have?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonnef, Commissioner's correct on the two big areas that we have general fund revenue that are included here are the unclaimed property, and that's in the neighborhood of $25 million a year, as well as the mutual fund registration that's in the neighborhood of $28 million a year. And those are the two kind of large chunk areas where we're having funds come back into the general fund. And then the rest is the smaller licensing revenues and those types of things.
Well, Senator Bonhoff, the Department of Commerce is a profit center.
I see that. Mr. Chair, I like that. Mm-hmm.
Some actually would have a different opinion that it should match services rendered, and it shouldn't be a profit center.
It's a little
weird. But it is, and we're not going to do anything about that in the near term, but it is. So the department does take in a lot more through its fees and such, and then returns a good amount to the general fund. So, okay. Mr. Jenke, you can continue.
Mr. Chair, do you have more questions on financial institutions here? Is that moving on then?
I don't. Is any other members? Mm-hmm. Okay. Continue.
Moving on to page 8 is our administrative services area. We have three primary work units within administrative services: our admin management area, information services, and unclaimed property. The admin management is really the bulk of it, and that includes everything from human resources to the front desk to accounting and financial budget-related services, the commissioner's office, legislative affairs, all those types of items. Information services, obviously, is our IT work area, and then the unclaimed property unit receives some general fund money to operate that program. Of the $10.16 million here in spending, $7.7 million of that is general fund, and the rest, $2.4 million, is special revenue fund. That $2.4 million comes from our indirect cost account, which is we're able via our indirect cost rate, our federally approved indirect cost rate, to use some of our federal funds to pay for administrative services. So you can see the pie chart here, basically 74% of our admin budget is kind of more on those general overhead items. Okay. Moving on to page 9 is the petrol fund. We're estimating just about $30.5 million in expenditures for the coming biennium. Primarily that $28.4 million of that is out in reimbursements or other costs, and only $2.176 is kind of what we'd consider operating dollars for that program. The $1,052,000 that Mr. Mueller has on here is for the actual admin, and then we have some other indirect costs and attorney general bills that are included in that slice of the pie.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to sort of hold off the?
Well, you know what, I think if it's a, what I don't want to do, I guess, is I don't want to have everybody kind of jumping up continually. So, Mr. Jenke, you're just sort of doing an overview of this at this stage, right?
And what Mr. Chair, that's correct, and we'll actually have a page at the end that has all of our change items on it, and
maybe because we won't be leaving the petrol fund and then not coming back, maybe we should continue on so we all get a good picture of this, and then we'll have plenty of opportunity for all the members to dive into the sections. Maybe we'll take them topic by topic with lots of questions then. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I was so that completes the petrol fund discussion here on page 9. Moving on to 10.
Sure, you want to?
Sure.
Just generally on the overview, and then the units within the Market Assurance Division. As you know, we get thousands of consumer complaints, and it's in a variety of areas: insurance, securities, real estate, all of the areas that we regulate. Each year, the staff responds to over 35,000 complaints, and most resolved informally. We also have more formalized complaints, and that's approximately 7,000 of those average. In addition to the enforcement activities, the division has four other units that are large workhorses within the core functions of the department. We have the policy analysis unit, which reviews the insurance company policy forms and rates and helps or assists in the licensing of the companies. There's the licensing unit. There's over 200,000 individuals and businesses that are licensed by the Department of Commerce in all of the areas within our jurisdiction. We also have the registration unit. It reviews the applications for securities, limited partnerships, bonds, corporate takeover issues, and then, of course, we also have the franchising and a number of other issues that they do. We also have our insurance fraud unit. That unit conducts investigations and makes arrests in cases of insurance fraud alleged by insurance companies, other law enforcement agencies, or consumers. It relies on the cooperation of many of our partners in law enforcement, prosecution, and in the private industry.
Mr. Chair, on page 11 is a funding breakdown for the market assurance area. Governor's budget includes $54.5 million in overall spending for market assurance. The general fund portion of that is $12.3 million. You can see from the graph here that a larger portion is the new federal funds or the federal money for the insurance exchange implementation. That is about $28.2 million over the biennium. And then it's broken out by work unit here in the chart at the top, so you can get a general sense of where the funds are going. With investigations, licensing, and insurance fraud, auto theft being the larger areas. The insurance fraud and auto theft funds are in the special revenue fund. Investigations and licensing are general fund accounts. Moving on to page 12, the last page of our presentation here, it outlines the governor's change items in for the Department of Commerce. The first one is the extension of the petrol fund. The petrol fund is set to sunset June 30th of 2012 in current law. This proposal would extend that sunset to June 30th of 2017 and continue the program at the same level that it had been in the past. And the second operating budget reduction here, as was outlined earlier, this is a 5% reduction on the market assurance budget and the administrative services budget. It would be a 3 FTE reduction in market assurance and a 2 FTE reduction in administrative services. Within that, there would also be additional reductions of the FTE. There's a couple of FTE within our market conduct unit, one on our consumer response team, and then an additional $91,000 in general administrative reductions, trying to further reduce communications, employee development, all the different types of items that we have some discretionary spending, and really kind of looking at those again and going through them. The 2 FTE reduction would be accompanied by corresponding administrative reductions, or looking again in our administrative services area for reductions that we haven't already taken. There's not many of those left, but we're combing to find some of those to kind of make up to get to our $204,000 amount that we have here.
Well, I think that what we would do is I appreciate Mr. Janke going through all of the items, and I want to make sure that committee members understand all the different aspects of the budget. I have a couple of questions, maybe just to start off with, high altitude for the commissioner. Could you tell us, commissioner, what was the process that the administration went through for you to come up with this? I'm with the financial institutions paying for itself essentially being zero, weights and measures being zero, you've got the others at around 5% reduction. Were you given a particular target to hit, or did you present something? Or what was the process that you went through in coming up with the 5% reductions, or total 3% agency-wide?
Just generally, Mr. Chair, generally what we did is met with the governor's staff and with the, with MMB, and went through our budget, as we're doing today, sort of category by category, talking with us about where we're lean, how we're funded, and what where we could come up with some I suppose as you would call it some shared cuts with what we're doing with in anticipating how to solve the budget. As you know, our budget is relatively small with respect to many other agencies. So we sat down and kind of went through, here's where the department has been, for example, in the FTEs over the last eight years or so, where we've anticipated or where there has been these reductions in the staffing. And then we sat down and looked at, for example, it's not here, but in our energy side, industry and businesses are asking for permitting processes to be expedited. So we focused on that and said, okay, well, we're going to, with the assessments, increase our staffing, and there's a comfort level there. A similar aspect, as you'd mentioned, is in the financial institution side, where in order to maintain the safety and soundness of our banking system, we have the examination staff under Deputy Commissioner Kevin Murphy. And we talked about how that's funded as we are today and in essence how that plays itself out. We really sat down with respect to us and said, here's where we think we can go. And generally those were the discussions. And then, working with MMB to come up with our budget.
Okay. Senator Reinert wanted to talk about the petrol fund. I think that's the topic. Maybe what we could do is we could switch over to the petrol fund. Now, this is a fund that doesn't have any impact on the general fund, but want to make sure members understand how it operates since this is the department. So why don't we do this? Let's everybody focus on the petrol fund, and Senator Reinert, why don't you lead us off on your questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if the department wants to do a little primer on how the petrol fund works before I dive into it, because I've got some specific questions, and I don't know if every member is familiar with how the petrol fund works.
Mr. Chair and Senator Reinert, we're happy to do that. With me or with us today is the director of the petrol fund, Joel Fisher. I'd ask Joel to give us sort of a broad overview. Let me just say this in preface to it all is that the funding was set to expire or sunset, and it has been. Well, the program has been in place since the 80s, and it has been up for sunset, I think, at least three. I can be corrected, yep. At least three times, and so this would be, I think, the fourth time in its life history where there's been an extension of the funds. But, Joel, would you like an overview just of its mission, what it does, and I can have the director here give.
Let's do that then. Okay. Yes.
Executive summary.
Yes.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members.
Good morning.
My name is Joel Fisher. I'm the director of the Petrol Fund program at the department, and I'll just give you a brief history of the Petrol Fund and kind of how we've gotten to the point where we have. The program was created in 1987 in response to federal legislation. Basically, we have all these leaking bare steel petroleum storage tanks out there at gas stations across the country. And the federal government said, okay, we want all of these tanks either replaced or upgraded by 1998. We also want some different leak detection type on the TAM, the dispensers and the lines and that. And a final piece to that was that every tank owner had to have up to $1 million worth of financial assurance, basically to cover any costs for leaking, cleaning up the contamination from the leaking tanks. And so states around basically the private insurance industry didn't really want to touch these sites. I mean, as one of our board members has said many times, you don't want to, who's going to insure a burning building? So the states basically created petrol fund programs around the country. 48 of the 50 states created something very similar to ours, just different variations on it. And since 1987, the petrol fund has reimbursed a total of about 30,000 claims on 13,000 leak sites. There's been a total of about 18,000 leak sites actually reported since 1987 to the Pollution Control Agency. We've only got applications on about 13,000 of those. And basically, this change item is to extend the program. Without this change item, without this extension of the program, basically the tank owners in the state right now would not have any coverage. Right now there's about 1,100 open leak sites that the MPCA is monitoring at this point. About between 350 and 400 new leak sites are reported each year, and that's been very steady over about the last 6 or 7 years. So,
and can you tell us, Mr. Fisher, now the way the fund is funded is 2 cents, and what level is that assessed at? Is it wholesale or retail, or what level is that assessed?
Mr. Chair, it's a 2 cent per gallon fee paid on petroleum products, and it's paid by the first distributor who touches the product in Minnesota. And it's imposed whenever our fund balance drops below $4 million. Once that happens, I know we have a 5-member board. I notify our board that that's occurred, and then at their next regularly scheduled board meeting, which is actually in a week, I will be recommending that the fee be turned back on. It's dropped below $4 million. And it stays on for 4 months, at which point it automatically turns off. Hmm. Historically, it's been on about 4 months out of the year, but the past few years now, because of the decreasing number of claims and that have come in, it's on about every 14 months it's imposed.
Okay. Has there been any consideration of, instead of having it be at a certain level and blinking on, blinking off, just having it at a lower rate all the time and just being done with it? Isn't that, administratively, would that be easier to manage?
Mr. Chair, I guess there hasn't been much discussion on that. It's worked pretty well so far. The board's been pretty happy with how it's worked. When the fund was first created, it was actually 1 cent per gallon. And based on a legislative audit, they upped it to 2 cents back in the early 90s. That's something that the board may take up at some point.
Okay. And then I have a question on this. And it was upped, but then there was a time a couple of years ago where that fund was actually raided, right, to the general fund. How much was transferred over to the general fund? This was in the budget of 2009. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much money was taken out?
Mr. Chair, yes. Actually, in the last legislative session, it was approximately $8 million was transferred to the general fund. And that was a combination of money from the Petro Fund goes to the Department of Commerce for the Petro Fund program, to the Pollution Control Agency for some of their operations associated with cleanup, and then also to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. So the general fund transfer came from Commerce's appropriation and Deeds appropriation as well, and it totaled $8 million.
So we upped the tax on it, built up a fund balance, and then stole that and put it in the general fund because of the deficit. That is what we did 2 years ago, I guess. Is that an accurate statement? Okay. Do you have other questions, Senator?
Yes.
Reiner? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ed, thank you for raising that point. As a new member, that was very frustrating. I mean, we raided every fund we had around here, so, we wanted to spend but didn't want to be honest about how we were paying for it. So, and I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you diving into the revenue side, because I was curious about how that works. So a couple questions, Mr. Chair, if you will. So generally, lately, it's been about 4 out of every 14 months. Did I understand that correctly? Is when it's on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reiner, yeah, that's correct. It's basically, so the last time it was imposed was, April through July of last year. I'll be recommending June, July, August, June through September of this year, so, which is actually a little bit even beyond the 14 months.
And how many tanks are out there? I guess when I came to the legislature, I had the thought that this was really kind of a 70s and 80s issue that we would eventually work our way through, and yet we've had to extend this multiple times, so it strikes me that we're not working our way through it. So I'm curious how many tanks are out there and what's the trend line? Are we not being better stewards of these tanks that get put in the ground, or do we just still have thousands of old tanks out there that we're finding as we do tell me a little bit about why we're not putting this issue to bed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reiner, basically when all the regulated tanks were upgraded by 1998, that took care of the vast majority of the problem. So the trend is definitely down.
Okay.
Basically, over the last 6 or 7 years, it's about 350 to 400 new releases called in every year. Most of those it's a combination. It's generally, you don't have leaking tanks. Regulated tanks anymore. They're all upgraded. It's going to be the lines with frost and stuff in Minnesota. The lines still haven't impacted. The gaskets and whatnot on the lines and the dispensers can fail. We have releases like that. Another big one is home heating oil tanks, which are not regulated, and farm tanks, which are for the most part not regulated. Those have not been upgraded for the most part, and so we have a fairly, you know, a large number of those are coming from those type of releases. Even with the new systems, the upgraded systems are not perfect. They still will leak at times, and so that's really where your 350 to 400. To some extent, it's tough to bring that number down. The Pollution Control Agency would probably have a better, you know, more detailed response as to what they're doing to try and bring that number down. But like I said, it's pretty much it's just leveled off.
One more follow-up.
Reinert, then Dames, and then Jungbauer. Okay. And we want to get onto the other fund areas too.
So in fiscal year 10, you had 721 applications. Just in ballpark, what did those cover? I mean, how many of them are, what percentage were tanks, what percentage were lines, what percentage were farm tanks?
Mr. Chair, Senator Reinert, I actually don't, I couldn't tell you how to break down in that respect. Okay. I guess I just,
I'd be
I don't
curious know. If you could follow up and just, I mean, I'm just looking for pie chart numbers.
So. Sure. Okay. You bet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Fisher, I've got a couple of questions. The first one, just wondering if there's some unencumbered monies within the petroleum tank cleanup fund, and if so, how many dollars that might be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, unencumbered or encumbered, I'm sorry?
Unencumbered.
Unencumbered. Right now, the fund balance is right around probably zero, I would guess, so that's why the board will be imposing the fee. There's, I would guess, approximately about $20 million in encumbered funds at this point.
Okay, thank you. Then I was also wondering, are there any opportunities to eliminate any duplication that there might be within the fund and within the agency, and if so, what do we need to do to eliminate that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, when you say duplication...
Well, are there different things that this agency is doing that other agencies are doing that you could work together on instead of each agency doing their own portion of this? Are there things that that the PCA or other groups are working on that you could work together on to eliminate cost, to eliminate duplication?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, generally our relationship with the MPCA is just for the members. The MPCA, the Petroleum Remediation Program, determines what work is necessary out at the site. And we, once the work has been done and the costs have been submitted for reimbursement, we determine the reasonableness of the costs. We're always working with them to try and cut down as much overlap. There really isn't much overlap, but we have access now to their databases, so we're trying to cut down on the amount of time that we're pestering their project managers to gather information. We try and get as much of that ourselves. In terms of we took over cost recovery duties actually a few years ago based on a legislative proposal to try and cut down costs there. They're basically not interested in the money side as much, and so we agreed to take that on. So we're doing everything we can to constantly, I guess, to make sure that we're as efficient as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Fisher. I guess this is really a follow-on to Senator Dames. You know, I'm a PCA licensed person, so I understand a lot of what they do. And you kind of alluded to this, but how many organizations, I mean, I heard PCA, Deed, and Commerce. Is there other government agencies that are part of this petrol fund, or is it those three agencies?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, the only agencies that receive petrol fund appropriations are those three. And basically, we receive the we handle the reimbursement account and cost recovery in that. The MPCA receives an appropriation for some administration of the oversight, basically, so the project managers and the hydrologists, emergency response staff who address these petroleum, like the emergency petroleum spills and that. They also receive money that they request from the Petrofund Board annually to do the fund finance cleanups. Those are the sites where there's no viable responsible person or the applicant has documented they don't have the financial means to do the cleanup. And in some cases, there are people who just refuse to do the cleanup, in which case the MPCA will do the cleanup, and then we go and recover the costs from the responsible person in that case. Finally, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, receives $6.2 million annually for grants to clean up basically petroleum-contaminated brownfields. Because the Petrofund program itself, we do not reimburse anything associated with redevelopment.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Fisher. That did explain a lot about that, but you know, we always look at why do we need multiple government agencies on each one of these funds? I mean, this isn't the only thing. We have so many things. I mean, on water issues, there's anywhere from 5 to 7 government agencies dealing with the same issue. Can you explain to us a reason why we couldn't put all this through the PCA if it's all dealing with the same thing and PCA is the hands on the ground? Why are they not capable of being the main administrator and cutting out other agencies here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, this probably goes back into my prehistory with the Petra Fund, but my understanding has always been when the Petra Fund was created back in 87, it was a conscious decision to separate the technical side and the financial side. And that's why they put basically us in the Department of Commerce, and we have a separate board that basically the Petra Fund reports to. The MPCA does as well, and there's the members of the board, one is from the PCA and one is the commissioner of the MPCA and the commissioner of commerce. But basically, I think they just wanted to keep that separate, and I think it's worked pretty well, to be honest.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think we need to look a little deeper on these kind of things because obviously it takes more time and more effort, maybe more FTEs to keep all these things separate. So, thanks.
Okay. Members, what I want to do is make sure we want to spend some time on the market assurance division. Now, I should ask Commissioner, is that where the healthcare exchange is planned to be? Is that going to be under, or is it its own separate sort of entity within the department?
Well, it's sketched. It's not in the department.
Nothing's determined yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
To be determined, and really this is a placeholder.
Okay.
For anticipated application for financial grant money.
Okay. Well, maybe what we should do is take a look at the changes that are proposed, the change items on the market assurance, and then also then I know that Senator Gazelka, you had some questions on the exchange that I wanted to make sure I didn't ignore that. So, members, let's see. Let's review here real quickly the change items in market assurance. We had a $316,000 reduction in that with three FTEs, and I want to find the page within the budget document. We're on page 12, and I want to just review those a little closer. On page 12, the recommendation. And I think someone touched on this, but then I know that there was some quizzical looks in that the amount of dollars and then the number of FTE. Oh, actually, I take that back. That was in the administrative services. We'll get to that. If we could, maybe, Commissioner, could we review the rationale again for the changes in the FTEs in market assurance? And where are those positions that are currently vacant and are not being filled? Or are these some things being combined or eliminated or retirements? Or how is that? How are these being met?
Sure. Tim address that. But you're going in the right direction.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, the kind of in anticipation of coming budget reductions, we've been holding some positions vacant, knowing that things were obviously not looking good. We'd seen the last forecast, et cetera. So the three positions that are outlined here for the Market Assurance Division are all currently vacant. So there wouldn't be any actual bodies getting laid off or any individuals getting laid off in that area. And then in addition to that, there's some additional $91,000 in additional operational reductions.
Okay. If you could, Mr. Fisher, what exactly is the market conduct unit? What do they do, and what were these positions that were eliminated?
Mr. Chair, in essence, these are investigators. These are folks who are out there doing market conduct investigations on companies. If we've received a complaint. If there's other types of investigative work, these are folks who are actually out there doing that type of investigative work, and That in essence, that's what they what those folks do. The consumer response team is a unit that fields calls, that does proactive work with citizens to try to help. You know, for instance, there's been a lot of talk about floods. They're out there proactively trying to help citizens before, make sure that they are properly insured, make sure that they have the type of insurance that they need, that they, you know, meeting the waiting, the 30-day wait deadline and that type of thing.
Okay. And then, Commissioner, do you feel confident? I mean, you're able to meet the mission of these units here with not filling those positions?
You know, Mr. Chair, I'll give you the honest answer, and that is that there's
you like that.
there's a lot more market conduct problems out there than you would anticipate. These vacancies were meant to be filled, so that we can address those concerns, and so that you know the department can. You know, regulate the market so that the practices are not happening out there. That said, we have really strong staff in the market conduct area, and really what this means is that given the workload that they have, we'll have to prioritize what they can tackle, and that's but in doing that, you know, the answer is we'll live with and work with what we have to accomplish the job.
Okay. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, to that point, as far as criminal investigation of the insurance fraud unit area, how many did we do? How many were filed last year?
You know, I can get you those numbers, but I'll give you an example. Last week we just announced apprehension and charging of a gang in Northeast Minneapolis that was a substantial problem, both in the you know the insurance fraud arson area, as well as in the real estate straw buyer area. We have in the last I think biennium transferred or requested 71 or we've had the ability to you know to charge these folks out on the criminal side. I have had a report done of how many current pending matters they are, and it's a significant number. We don't want to get into the details of who or what they are, but there are a fair number currently.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Commissioner, backing up to the three positions that won't be filled, can you tell me how long those positions have been vacant or open?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, the two in the market conduct area, we've had a couple staff that have left within the past 9 months. The individual in the consumer response team, that position became vacant within the last 5 months, I believe it was.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a question. These account for those positions that were vacant currently now, not filling them. In a department of several hundred people, my guess is that over the next 2 years that there will be additional vacancies. I would imagine just a natural turnover with that many people. There's going to be some people moving on to other jobs or other things. Is there a policy about, is there any sort of a freeze on hiring or filling any other vacancies within the administration? Or would you then, because these are the only ones that are budgeted to be left vacant, would you then hire to fill? Or do you have a policy going forward over the next 2 years?
Mr. Chair, there's no specific policy in terms of cross-the-board freeze in our department, or and I can't speak for the rest of the departments, but there is a strong sense of frugality that, you know, with respect to the seriousness of the budget, that it's my position, my perspective as Chair of the Department of Commerce, that as to FTEs and as to other funding, that we be as frugal as possible to the extent that we can, and to share with respect to, you know, in a, you know, I suppose in the percentage of where the whole budget problem is. With respect to that, I would say that I will be responsible about the replacements. There are, for example, there may be people in line who are in senior positions who we need to be managing and supervising a unit, and if that happens, we'll be in a position of necessarily replacing those folks somehow. Where and how that comes up, it's really just, I guess it goes back to being frugal and being a responsible manager for the department in terms of when those vacancies come up and what we do.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. When you were here before, I asked you about the audit that was done of the department, and you had indicated that prior to accepting the appointment that you had reviewed very thoroughly the OLA's audit, and that you were working to correct some of the deficiencies, and I wonder if you can give us any update on that.
Sure.
And I certainly would encourage you in terms of the professionals that are in your department to not ever sacrifice the internal control function for what otherwise could be called frugality, because the penny wise and pound foolish is what causes embezzlement in our state agencies, even though we're not talking about commerce at this point.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, to your point, I take seriously the responsibility of addressing the issues identified by the Office of the OLA. In addition to having reviewed it, my first days and continuing on a weekly basis, make sure that we are, I'd say, beefing up our internal control staffing emphasis and making it accountable at the level of the leadership of our department.
Could I ask a follow-up on that, too, Senator Reston, to that point? Some of the findings were directed towards not collecting penalties and fines. But that, now my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you were to go out and collect those departments, as a matter of public policy, it's a bad idea for you to keep what you collect, because it could be a distorted incentive. But if you collect those penalties, those would go to the general fund, I believe, any of the fines and penalties that are collected. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes. Mr. Chair, we're addressing those, and the department, before I even started, started to work on how that how was identified in the OLA's report in terms of how it's assessed to the companies and collected and then turned over to the Department of Revenue for the collection aspect of it. And once it's over there, it's my understanding it's really out of our hands.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, those are non-dedicated general fund dollars when they come in. So I think more maybe directly it's – we don't keep any of those dollars. They go right back into the general fund and are part of that bigger budget.
Okay. Senator Jumbar, you have
but
a question.
But, Mr. Chairman, they need to be tracked.
Yes.
Accurately.
Right.
That was
the problem.
And the indication of the receipts need to be acknowledged and tracked accurately as they are moved along. I think that was one of the issues.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. And you know, some of this I'd like to talk to you offline about. I had some people come in my office and talk to me about some of your investigations and things. And actually, so members, I went in and started reading the, and it seems like a very broad authority that the Commerce Department has in terms of starting investigations and charging people with different things. And so, Commissioner, it seems, and you kind of talked about this, and it just, there's so much duplicity, but in my mind, and even when you talked about the gang thing and stuff, that you have this broad authority, and there's a fine line between, I think, your charge and your mission of protecting the consumers, And when I read the statutes, it's almost as though you have police powers. And so I'm a little scared when I read the statutes as to what the Commerce Department can actually go out and do. So Commissioner, help me through some of these things in terms of the market assurance and the way you do investigations, and that how do you use restraint in terms of those sorts of things and really focus on that consumer protection issue.
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbar, there's let me start from the general and go to the specific. The department is, as an executive agency, responsible for administering the laws that are given to it in terms of, regulating those industries, including the enforcement aspect of it. It's to take care of the public interest as well as to take care of and make sure that consumers are protected, but also to work with industries that we regulate in terms of the conduct that's happening in the industries. So some of this is businesses identifying other businesses, and some of it is consumers who call in with a complaint. Within the department or within our jurisdiction, it can be best split in terms of a civil enforcement side, and then there is a unit that has more of a criminal enforcement side. Those units are completely separate. They're separately staffed, and they're separately managed. They do communicate from time to time. A matter could come in as a complaint or concern from a business. Go back to this example of last week where we charged a gang. Actually, it can come in as an arson problem and as an insurance claim problem. Well, when you look at who are the actors doing it, it turns out that it's criminal conduct. So what will happen is it'll be taken up and considered as a criminal matter. Some of the criminal matters are not kept with the department if they're not insurance related, but to the extent that they are, there is that unit that does that work. And and then if something, an investigation continues, it ripens, just like any other investigative agency, they will reach out and work with others at other levels, at the state or federal or local level, in terms of the investigation. So sometimes this is cooperative work with local police. And then they'll also bring in and work with the prosecutors, the county prosecutors, for that. So that's that unit, and it is separate and distinct from, the civil enforcement area, which would be your more typical consumer complaints or issues in that arena.
Okay. Senator Jungbauer.
And just to kind of follow up on where I'm going with that, members, I will broaden that with other agencies as well this year that we deal with here. But what I'm finding in my talking to people, and not just with Commerce but with other agencies, and you kind of spoke to it a little bit about businesses complaining about businesses, it seems like we have larger businesses filing complaints against smaller businesses, almost to use the government as the strong arm to how can we force a lot of costs onto small businesses so that they have to go out of business and just gives us more business. So we're seeing a disturbing trend out there, and it's interesting, but I'm compiling some evidence on that I'll be bringing forth in some of my bills later.
Okay. Thank you. Members, what I'd like to do is spend some time on the insurance exchange, if I could. And if we could, and I realize that there's a lot of unknowns, but maybe what we could do is if you could start off, because we have not as a committee spent much time at all really looking at that, and we know it's good, it's on the table. Maybe if you could talk a little bit about what's gone on internally in the administration with the Departments of Health and Human Services and the Department of Commerce, and what's been going on that end. You applied for a grant, which the previous administration was opposed to applying for. Now you're doing some things with that, and then it looks like there is a whole bunch of money as well. And I have a number of questions, as I know other committee members do. So maybe we could start with where things are at with the exchange.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to give you a preview, at least from our work on our side of it. And with us today is April Todd Memloff too. And so when we get, if you have, we'll between us get to the questions that you may have. But let me step back and talk about the general, and then we can delve down a little bit into this. As you know, the insurance exchange is on the table, and as the administration started off, there was a quick assessment and determination of under the Affordable Care Act, what are the responsibilities of the three main agencies. So with that, you have, as you indicated, the Department of Commerce, you have the Health and Human Services, and then you have the Department of Health. And then in essence, what you could do is it's an informal sub-cabinet of the three agencies that are addressing these issues. If you would say, you know, if it's, for example, if it's a Medicaid change or area, that would be in Human Services. If it's health-related, health policy, health development, that's Department of Health. And then with respect to insurance, it's the Department of Commerce. And there's, this goes along with and piggybacks on the multi and the jurisdiction of the Department of Health and the Department of Commerce over HMOs, for example, in the health industry. And what the team has the team in the administration and at the cabinet level has determined is that in the insurance exchange piece of it would be led by the Department of Commerce, myself and my staff in working on the development and implementation of it. So what we've done is taken a look at what had been done and what was in the works in the prior administration. Without going into too much detail, there was some work, a fairly significant amount of work that was done by the prior administration to do its homework and anticipate, what could potentially happen with respect to the and actually worked with a lot of stakeholders that are involved in it. The prior administration had not applied for, skipped the opportunity to apply for federal grant money in 2010. It was in two areas. One is the one that we could address immediately. The other we couldn't go back and do anything about. But the first one, the first thing we did is immediately apply for $1 million grant for the development and implementation of the insurance exchange. The question is, what does that money go for? The money is to develop the sketch and architecture for what a health insurance exchange could and would look like. In order to do that, it became immediately clear to me that with the Department of Commerce taking the lead, we would need to bring in the experts, basically, and help do this. First off, we have brought over to the Department of Commerce, basically asked them to the Department of Health to lend us and to use the opportunity to have April Todd Memloff, who's here today, work on the Department of Commerce's staff, and I've appointed her to be the director of Health Insurance Exchange for how we go forward and develop and study that. I also want to say, though, that you have to understand that this is a broadly jurisdictional in the sense that it's not just the Department of Commerce, but we have the Department of Health and we have the Department of Human Services. And we're working extremely well cooperatively in using the resources and staffing of each of the departments and their expertise in various areas that will go into the planning and development of the insurance exchanges. So, for example, what does that mean generally? The Department of Health has exceptional staff. It has April has been the state's health economist. And has an exceptional staff and the technology that, crunches all those numbers. The Department of Health has public wellness and public health policy folks on their staff. The Department of Human Services, is, as everyone knows, has the federal funds, the federal Medicaid programs and all those, and those folks will be a part of the exchange. And then as well, the Department of Commerce has its staff with respect to the insurance solvency and monitoring of the health plans. So all the staff are working very well to focus in on and analyze what needs to be done to implement and develop the health insurance exchange to the extent we can. And what we're anticipating is, and we're working with HHS, the federal government, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and everyone in putting together sort of the staffing, sketching out what the health insurance exchange might look like. And then stepping back from that, I'd say this, that as you know, there's a bill that's been introduced. It's been, I think, discussed up in the House side. There may be other versions of it. The administration is working on something of its own, and we expect something soon on that.
Okay. Senator Rest.
Just a very quick question, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. The $1 million grant, did that require any state match, or was it 100%?
100%. Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, no. It's all federal money.
Thank you.
And Senator Gazelka, you had a question.
I got about three, but maybe I'll take one and then pass them around a little
okay.
bit, but in case somebody else has the same questions. Obamacare has not been received by
Mr.
everyone
Chairman,
with great enthusiasm.
The name of the act is the Affordable Care Act, and to call it Obamacare is very pejorative and disrespectful.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, not meant to be disrespectful, Senator Rest, but the piece of legislation that we're talking about, it is under constitutional challenge. Our federal Congress is talking about not funding it. If we move forward with this and one of those two things happens, how do we get out of this? And can we? Can we just go back to the way things were?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, let me address it this way. As you know, the federal law was enacted signed into law by the president, and we as a state are operating under its jurisdiction, and many other states as well. With respect to the Supreme Court and the court challenges, in anticipation of that, as you know, there have been at least five, maybe six cases that have gone to decision and that are out there. Some are only as to part of the act, some as to one, maybe only as to all. And what the outcome of that is to be determined. It won't be determined until and if the Supreme Court addresses it. Anticipating that that it's not likely that all of the act would be struck down. In fact, anticipating the entire thing might be upheld. With those considerations, in under the act, it has to be implemented by January 1, 2014. There's a more critical date, though, that's January 1, 2013, at which time all states have to prove to the federal to HHS, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, that the exchange works in your state. And if it doesn't work, the federal government will determine and decide to do its own exchange for that state. So we have until 2013 to prove that this thing, that our exchange will work. And with that, what that means is IT systems, operations, staffing, everything has to be in place so that there won't be any hiccups whatsoever in rolling out an exchange and anticipating the market changes. So what we're doing is working back in time so that we can, in fact, we're sort of behind. We're behind some of the other states in getting ourselves, in place. But let me also say this: Minnesota is also ahead of other states because we need to be proud of the fact that we have a unique healthcare system that will allow Minnesota to quickly become and is a leader actually is a leader among many states in terms of its healthcare delivery system, but also as we get into the conversations at the with other states, Minnesota is identified as a leading state in its healthcare and health policy. So we will be looked on for advice and advice. We already have been asked for advice by the federal government and other states to help them. What I would also throw in there, because you mentioned it, is that that Congress is looking at the funding of this. It's my understanding that that may be true on the congressional side or the House side, but not necessarily, in fact, not so on the Senate side. So the chance that that would happen and then survive after that with the White House, I'm anticipating that would not be the source of stopping this thing. So that the bottom line is for us in the administration is given the federal law and given the state of our state system is to proceed ahead and to make sure that we have an opportunity to do this in a Minnesota way rather than having the federal government choose what system they would want to have for us.
Follow up?
Senator Gazelka.
So you mentioned, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Rothman, you mentioned that there's legislation out there now in the state, and then you said that you guys are looking at something else. How much of what the administration can do is unilateral if they wanted to?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, it seems to me, and I think probably to many other people, that the best outcome for the state of Minnesota is to have all interested parties, all stakeholders work on a system for Minnesota that works for everybody. So it would be a strong preference that folks look at all the issues, address their perspectives, and that we as a team, Minnesotans, find a solution so that we can move ahead and move on to the next generation of what healthcare will look like. We have, to your point, been asked, you're not the first, as to what can be done that way. But at this time, we're just looking at it and working with folks to see what we can do and what we can accomplish as a team approach.
I'm going to ask a question, if I could first, and then we've got several on the list. Because I want to focus on the dollars today, because we're looking at the budget documents, and I understand, Commissioner, that there's $1 million grant, startup, sketch out the architecture. Beyond that $1 million, there's some significant dollars in fiscal years 12 and 13, $10 million and change and $17 million change, totaling over $28 million. Is that budgeted in here? Is this federal dollars as well? That's 100% that we're just going to be given by the federal government to do this? Is that what I'm seeing here?
Mr. Chair, the answer is yes.
Okay. And then what... Then beyond that, again, we don't know what this is going to look like entirely. I understand that. But is this exchange going to require general fund appropriations going forward beyond that? Are we going to have to figure out a way to fund this going forward or not? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Chair, here's, I think, how the answer breaks down as to what we know now. Number one is that by 2014, Minnesota needs and all states need to have an exchange up and running. And after that point, it is a state-supported system. Before then, what we're doing is trying to determine exactly what that would look like, and we're just starting to get the money now in the door to be able to assess and determine and actually answer your question.
Okay, so, Commissioner, the federal plan is that in 2014 – that it becomes a state responsibility, and we're flying solo at that point to fund the exchange, whether it's through fees or whether it's through general fund appropriations or some other source. we won't be getting any more federal dollars to operate the exchange beyond 2014. Is that correct?
Well, let me answer it this way. In essence, yes. But what the money, the federal funding that we're getting now in the $1 million and then in the next two biennials, and actually going forward, there's going to be additional funds, is to get everything up and running and to determine and analyze the exchange and architecture will look like. It's a substantial fund. That money gets us a long ways to putting the house together and building the infrastructure. What it will look like after that point, I think we'd have to be forecasting at this point.
Okay. We've got a number of questions. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, and just to Senator Gazelka's point, I know this isn't the forum to debate the pros and cons of whether or not we ought to be having a health insurance exchange, but I would just remind Senator Gazelka that Senator Han presented his approach for how to reform Minnesota care, and it was quite an innovative approach trying to drive the individuals in some of the individuals in Minnesota care to the public market, and right now there are some constraints why that's problematic given what's available in the public market. So I actually looked at the health insurance exchange concept as one of the key strategies to address some of the problems in the HAN approach with regard to reforming Minnesota care. And so I think it's important for all of us in these conversations to continue to be open-minded as to what the potential is for some of these reforms.
Senator Chamberlain.
You, Mr. Chairman, you asked the question I was going to ask, so
okay.
We're good. Thank
My
you.
Job anticipating. Okay. If I could, Commissioner, along the same line, when we're talking about the dollars, the 9 additional FTEs, are those salaries that are paid for with these federal dollars, or are they state employees part of the Department of Commerce then?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I'll ask April Todd Momloff to answer some of those questions.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Thank you.
Again, my name is April Todd Momloff. I'm the Health Insurance Exchange Director at the Department of Commerce. Mr. Chair, related to the budget that is in there for the Health Insurance Exchange, as the Commissioner was mentioning, it's a placeholder, and it's our best guess is kind of what the cost might be that would be coming from federal funds, so what the federal funds would cover. The FTEs would be covered under that federal funding.
It would be okay. All right. Other questions? And members, we'll have plenty of opportunity to talk about the healthcare exchange issue going forward, certainly on that. I did wonder if we could spend a moment on unclaimed property, if we could, because I've had a number of members ask some questions to me about that. If we could, Commissioner, just hit that real quick. Maybe a very brief 60-second overview of what this is. Now, we know that about $25 million a year. Is it a year or biennium? Is returned to the general fund. About a year is returned to the general fund. So it's a significant amount of money. But maybe if we could have just a really quick overview of that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Amy Trumper of our staff, who manages the unclaimed property division for us, can answer all your questions for that.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. The unclaimed property program, just a 60-second overview, it collects unclaimed funds from various sources, from businesses all over the United States that have the last known owner located in the state of Minnesota. So about each year, we collect between 50 and 55 million that goes directly to the general fund, and then we process claims back to the rightful owner of approximately right about 35 to 40% of that amount goes back to the rightful owner. So the balance would be roughly the $25 million that stays in the general fund.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. What of the types of property, give us some real-world examples of the types of property that would be turned over to the department.
A lot of times it is owners that have moved, rightful owners that have moved, and it's savings accounts, investment accounts, your utility refund when you changed your home phone when you moved, and they they don't have a forwarding address. There are due diligence requirements for each business to go through before they turn that property over, but sometimes they are not able to find the rightful owner.
Okay. So then generally this would be the types of property are going to come from large businesses, mm-hmm. because if you're a small business and somebody whatever, you know, the credit balance on the books of a couple hundred dollars, you can't find them, they generally don't turn that over to the state, I imagine.
Mr. Chair, they actually are required by statute to turn that over to the state. Okay. Also, wages is a great example. Okay. Some people choose not to cash their payroll checks. So wages from any business, regardless of the size.
Or they could lose them and forget about them.
Exactly.
They get in the drawer somewhere and they just
or
don't
cash
them.
Or they stick them in the drawer for a rainy day and then lose the check before.
And so those balances then are transferred to the department, and that's what you accumulate.
Correct.
Over time. Okay. Are there different – then you're required to hold on to this for a certain period of time, sort of a lost and found. If you don't claim it by a certain amount of time, then it reverts. Are all types of property, do they have the same timeline, or are they different?
Mr. Chair, there are different requirements for the property to be turned over to the state. Some are 3-year, some are 5-year. Wages, for example, is 1 year. Traveler's checks, for example, is 15 years. Once that is turned over to the state holds it for good for the rightful owner. At no time does it become 100% property of the general fund. We hold it for good until the rightful owner or heir comes forward.
Okay, Senator Jungbauer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of quick questions, and I guess I'll try to follow that line first and then ask another question. But the first one would be, what would be the effect when we're looking at some of these things of accelerating, turning it over to the general fund? Some states have different rules that way.
Mm-hmm.
Does it help us, or does it just kind of all evens out anyway?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, I can tell you that Minnesota as a whole is actually on the more aggressive side of that turnover period. Most states are at a 5-year cycle. For the majority of our properties, we are at a 3-year cycle. So we are actually on the more aggressive side to have that turned over to the state. For traveler's checks, for example, that is a 15-year turnover period just because of the type of instrument that it is. There's actually legislation going on right now with New Jersey New Jersey is trying to shorten that abandonment period, and they have been unsuccessful thus far. But for the majority of the types of properties that Minnesota receives, we are actually on the more aggressive side as opposed to some of the other states that follow a 5 or 7 year dormancy. And the theory behind that is to give the businesses and the rightful owner the ample amount of time to come forward and collect their property before it is turned over to the state, and also for that company to do the due diligence required before that property is turned over.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for full disclosure, members, I did accidentally search that site. You know, accidentally, I don't know. For some reason, they do a pretty good job of advertising it. So my wife and I searched it, and we did find a nice size insurance check that we were able to get out of the unclaimed property. I don't know why we never cashed or didn't know or whatever happened there. But, several years.
Sorry, I thought that maybe it was an internet gambling site you were on.
Internet gambling site. I'm not very good at gambling. I used to own my own business. That was a big enough gamble. Several years back, we went through a lot of talk about gift cards and things, and we worked on some legislation on gift cards. I'm wondering why gift cards aren't included like they are in other states. I know it's a pretty big cash deal for a lot of businesses because an extremely high percentage of gift cards are never used.
Yes, Senator Jungbauer and Mr. Chair, there actually is some research being done right now on a national level to address the gift cards because in each state they are handled differently. One of the approaches that is being looked at right now is almost a flat line percentage because so many gift cards are sold and not only are the balances not used, but there can be what they call breakage in the industry for basically the unused balance. You have a $50 gift card, you end up with $5 left, you throw the gift card away because you never used the remainder of the $5. there's a study being done right now on an approach where, although gift cards would not be reportable under the unclaimed property law, there would almost be a percentage exemption, meaning if there was a 5% reported to the state as unclaimed property, because it is not to go back to the bottom line of the business as profit, but if they could offer some type of percentage break, meaning for X percentage for unused gift cards would be reported, 3% of the unused balance would be reported to the state to comply with their unclaimed property law. It would not be the balance of the unused gift cards, but it would almost be an umbrella reporting based on the gift card balances. One of the biggest hurdles on the owner's side is when you go to a company, when you go to Best Buy and you buy a gift card, you do not necessarily give that owner information for who that gift card is going to be for. So when it comes time to turn that money over to the rightful owner, we would not have owner information on who gets the unused balance of that gift card. That being said, gift cards and really electronic banking cards as a whole are becoming more and more common, and it is a way for some businesses to get around the unclaimed property reporting.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Seeing none then, Commissioner, thank you very much, and to all your staff at the Department of Commerce, appreciate all of the insight. This will be very valuable for us as we go forward, and look forward to working with you and your staff in working on the budget. Members, tomorrow will be a hot topic meeting, and it's a bill regarding ticket sales that I've wandered into, and it'll be very interesting. So please be here on time. We're going to use the entire committee time. The committee is adjourned.